Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've sent me in the comments section of my Q&A videos and also by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. And this is our 20th episode of this. You know, I didn't know when I started this whether it was going to be successful or not as a regular series. I didn't know, you know, how many questions I was going to get. And I just have been, you know, as I've mentioned, you know, I got plenty of questions to answer and I'm trying to power through these things as quickly as I can and yet give you good answers to them. So keep them coming. Your comments are great. Very, very much appreciated. And any feedback you have about the answers that I give you, I'm more than happy to look at. I see everything that comes through my channel. I'm also having a lot of fun with my new podcast with Ruth McLeod, called the Sensibly Speaking podcast. We're having a lot of fun doing that. We just put out our third episode, and that comes out every Saturday. And you can subscribe to that on iTunes or at sensiblyspeaking.com. So that's out there as well. And this week, I will be getting back into some Scientology stuff. I've got an interview that I just did with an ex-Scientologist that I think you're going to find fascinating. And that's coming out later this week. But let's get to your questions now. Here we go. Mr. Bazzini, with funds coming in to the Church of Scientology dwindling, even the whales have limits. I feel Miscavige will be forced to dip into their huge reserve funds to keep the lights on in the orgs. Do you agree? If so, does that mean they are in a death spiral? You know, one of the most popular pastimes in the Scientology critic community, both of those from those who were never in and those who are ex-Scientologists, are to try to talk about or predict the demise of Scientology. And, you know, the fact is that if you're looking for a financial decline or demise, you're going to be waiting for a very long time. The real estate holdings of Scientology value into the you know, millions and millions and millions, and I think actually it goes into billions of dollars. When you're talking about pure value of land and buildings worldwide. And then you have this liquid amount of money out in offshore bank accounts through the IAS funding trusts, trust funds, and the just, you know, amount that's in the bank and the investments that the Church of Scientology has made that nobody knows about in terms of value. I mean, we know that the church has money and they invest it in long-term, you know, things that are in long-term returns. So you're talking about an organization that has available to it, you know, billions of dollars. $1 billion is $1,000 million. That's a tremendous amount of money. And what we're seeing now is because of the PR failure of the ideal org strategy, Miscavige is starting to authorize money to be paid out in order to get the ideal orgs funded, in other words, to buy the buildings, but he's really just increasing the real estate holdings of the church when he does that. So there's not really a big loss of value there per se. It's just going from liquid funds to real estate, you know, valuation properties. And I don't pretend to understand all that. I'm throwing around these words, but, you know, but the point is that the value is still there in terms of the assets of the church. So if he had to pay the bills of every church, and there's really only about, 130 of them or something, if he had to pay the lights and the utilities and the bills and all the staff pay of all the churches out of the reserves of Scientology, the International Reserve Fund of Scientology, he could do that for years and years and years and years and years without blinking an eye. It wouldn't be a problem. He doesn't do that because he doesn't care about the welfare of the staff, and the staff aren't aware of the fact or don't seem to care about the fact that all this money is sitting there available. They don't think that way. So they sweat bullets to keep the lights on and keep the doors open in their local churches. And if they don't make it work, then the continental level management organizations have to foot the bills out of their money because the continental management organizations get money in from all of the churches in their continental zone, like, for example, the Western United States, which is where I used to work, has 31 churches or something like that, that it's collecting money from every week, and it has its own continental level reserves. And if one of those organizations isn't paying their bills, the continental level management organization pays it out. They do a bailout. And then they, run everybody in that organization, the executives in that organization, through the ringer and punish them and all that sort of thing for having to bail them out. But it's the continental organization is held responsible for that, not Miscavige. Money goes up in Scientology. It doesn't really come back down too easily unless Miscavige authorizes it, like in the case of buying these new ideal org buildings, like I think they just did down in Bogota and are doing in a few other places. I think Mike Rinder reported recently that Harlem finally got footed by Miscavige out of the... when you see an IAS-funded or IAS-sponsored Church of Scientology, one of these new ideal orgs opening up that way, that's what that means, is that means that Miscavige paid the bill. And that's happening more and more because he's had such a colossal PR failure with the ideal org strategy that he hasn't had any choice in order to get these things to continue to open so he can continue the appearance of expansion and of the church expanding, because the church is not expanding, not even a little bit, in terms of membership. So that's kind of the situation there. But in terms of a dwindling spiral, we need to be realistic about this. When it comes to the finances of the Church of Scientology, they have enough money to last for a very long time. And that's really the answer to that question. Tomas M. Hey, Chris. I was always curious about Scientology from the day I heard about it. I wasn't looking to convert or anything, just curious in my study of religions. And I was wondering, why, after everything that has been revealed about the church, do you think people still would convert to Scientology, or are there still people who are converting? Okay, I don't have access to the Church of Scientology statistics anymore, so I don't have hard numbers, but we have lots of indicators all over the internet, for example, photos of empty parking lots of their ideal org churches, and of course, all of the media, which portrays nothing but Scientology as a toxic, horrible, dangerous cult, which is correct positioning for them. So anybody who really, to be blunt, anybody who has two gray cells to rub together shouldn't be going anywhere near Scientology. But some people don't seem to have two gray cells to rub together. Or they, get sucked in through a friend or through family members who they trust. And they don't Google, they don't look, and they take their Scientology friend's word for it, and they get suckered in. You get those kinds of people. So Scientology still has some ability to sucker people into it, but it's nowhere like it was in the 70s and the 80s, where it was actually either not known about or it was well thought of in some circles because of its positive marketing. So at this point, they're definitely on the decline in terms of membership. Aaron P. Great show, Chris. Question. If I was to decide to try and join the Church of Scientology, I wouldn't, and told them I was flat broke and unable to obtain any money, would they take pity on me and allow me to do coursework anyhow? Or would they just show me the door and kick me out? Bluntly, they're going to kick you out. They might not say it in really blunt terms, but yeah, they're going to show you the door, because Scientology is a money-making scam. And in the end, if you don't have money, they don't care about you. Period. That's the bottom line. And this applies to new people coming in, as well as existing Scientologists. You could be a Scientologist for decades. And if you run out of cash, and you go in there and your mother just died, or your wife just died, or just left you, or you're in a bad way, they might have a chat with you, but in terms of giving you any counseling or any professional services to deal with that loss or trauma or upset, forget it. You're not getting anything. And that is how Scientology operates. Ah, indeed. Hi, Chris. My question is about OT3. It has been so widely publicized over the years, and although Scientologists are kept in a bubble, I find it hard to imagine in today's information age they haven't heard of its details. I've seen people bring it up to the body routers in the street when they try to solicit stress tests as well. If I were to walk into a Church of Scientology today and express interest in joining, but voice concerns about thinking OT3 is silly, in detail, I am certain they would just deny its existence. Suppose I stuck it out and paid enough money to get to OT3. Would they really still put this in front of me? How can they still push this? Do you think they might scrap the Xenu story, or would that be blasphemous since it came from Hubbard? Okay, well, some of your question is a little unrealistic, so I'm just going to address this with the information that I know or experienced when I was in Scientology. The most of Scientologists do not know about and are not aware of the Xenu story. And they're not going to know what you're talking about when you start talking about DC-9s and the Galactic Overlord Xenu and volcanoes. They literally do not have any idea what you're talking about, and they may have cross-flowed a word here and there or some of the story, but they police themselves. It is a really well-kept secret within the world of Scientology. No one in Scientology talks about this with each other, period. They just don't. And I know it might seem hard to imagine that a group of people will keep themselves censored off of the internet regarding this stuff, but they really do. So that's kind of where that sits, that's where their head's at. If you were to go into a Church of Scientology and start spouting off about Xenu, they would show you the door, is what they would do. They'd say, look, dude, I don't want to hear about it, I don't want to talk about it, and there's the door, because we're not interested in you telling us about it. So either keep it to yourself, and buy this book, and get on course, or do our services, or get the hell out. And that's how they feel about it, because they feel that anybody who walks in there spouting that information is N theta, and is trying to interpolate them. Those are the words they use. In other words, you're trying to create upset. And they don't want to hear it. Now, something else you might want to know about is I was working at the Advanced Organization in Los Angeles and was at sort of the gateway to people getting onto the OT levels. I was in charge of the area that delivered the services preliminary to getting onto the OT levels, and found out when I worked there that if you had prior exposure to the OT materials on the internet, you were not going to be getting onto the OT levels because that was considered out security. In other words, you were the kind of person who was going to go on the internet and look stuff up and find out about it, and so they weren't going to trust you with the security of the OT materials. Now, I should temper this by saying that would be if you were a Scientologist who had done that. I don't really know what they would do with you if you came in having looked at all of that material before you came into Scientology. I'm really not sure what would happen. But yes, they would, if they did allow you to get onto the OT levels, that's the material they have. They're not going to change it for you or tell you it's something different just because you read it and think it's ridiculous. If you get to that level in Scientology where you've paid like over $100,000 at this point. So this is kind of, you're pretty in. So it would be a little bit silly to get to that point, pay that much money, and then say, yeah, you know, I really want to do the OT levels, but although this whole Xenu thing is all just ridiculous, if you come in with that attitude, you're definitely not getting anywhere near the actual OT materials. So that's kind of the reality of it, and I hope that gives a little bit better idea of what goes on in the church with this stuff and why and how they would treat you with that. Robert Tobias. Hi, Chris. Great videos that have certainly educated me and scared me about the Church of Scientology. Are Scientologists homophobic? And also, Miss Mojo 86. Hey, Chris. Have you experienced any homophobic behavior toward other Scientologists during your time there? Scientologists are homophobic. Period. End of story. There really isn't any other thing to say about it. And the reason I can say this so certainly and was as such a blanket statement is because it's in the scriptures of Scientology to be homophobic. And specifically, there's a book called Science or Survival, where L. Ron Hubbard specifically describes homosexual behavior as a sexual perversion, and he labels it at the on the tone scale, on the Scientology emotional scale, as a level of 1.1, which is labeled covert hostility. It's not a good place to be in Scientology, and in fact, Hubbard describes the level of covert hostility as being like a snake, a poisonous, venomous snake who cannot be trusted as a human being, right? That's the analogy he makes, is a poisonous, venomous snake. So, and a covertly hostile person in Scientology is portrayed as a person who smiles to your face but has a knife hidden behind their back. So all homosexuals are considered to be at that level in Scientology's emotional tone band. They're covertly hostile because Hubbard said so. So Scientologists don't really have much of a choice as to how they want to consider homosexual behavior or anything that is considered sexual perversions. That would include transgender, you know, anything that falls into the LGBT category is definitely going to be sexually perverted. Now, they will, because this isn't a very politically correct, you know, socially acceptable sort of idea to have, they present a false facade of not being homophobic. And in fact, you even have that Scientology actress on Orange is the New Black who's, you know, portraying homosexual behavior on the show that she's on. But I can tell you, behind the scenes, that kind of information, that kind of behavior is not acceptable in any way within the Church of Scientology. And if you come into the Church of Scientology as a homosexual, they will take your money and they will do counseling with you, and they'll take you to a certain point, and they'll try to not pray the gay away, but they'll try to counsel the gay away. They'll address it in the counseling that you receive in Scientology, the auditing, and they'll keep hammering on it and tell you to please not practice the homosexual behavior while you're getting the auditing, and because they think it's not okay to do, and that they want you to acknowledge that it's something that is not optimum about yourself and that's something that should be changed, because they have a very dim traditional view of gender roles and how genders are supposed to operate. And that all of that comes straight out of L. Ron Hubbard. I'm not going to, you know, look up all the passages and quote Science of Survival here. I'm just going to tell you that it's in that book, and there's a whole chapter in there about sexual behavior, and Hubbard describes it very, very specifically. It's not, he doesn't mince words or beat around the bush on this. And any Scientologist who publicly says anything differently is lying. Whale Boy. Hello, Mr. Shelton. You prefaced one of your videos by summing up your experiences at the Ontario Scientology Convention. You stated how it reinvigorated your interest in making more Scientology-related videos, and that you now know definitively that Scientology is purely a money-generating scheme. Care to share a few of the factoids that influenced your conclusion? I learned a lot. It was in Toronto, not Ontario, by the way. And the Toronto conference, the Getting Clear conference, was truly an amazing event. And also, again, this isn't product placement, but the videos of the various briefings and talks that we did in Toronto are going to be up on Vimeo very, very, very soon, like within, I think, a week or two. And those will be available, and there will be a price for those. I'm not sure exactly what the cost is going to be, but it is pretty minimal. And you can see the talks that occurred there, and you can see yours truly, and lots of other amazing speakers. And so some of the factoids that I got that really impressed the truth upon me about Scientology as a money-making scheme, there was a presentation from a PhD-level toxicologist about the science, or pseudoscience, I should say, of the purification rundown, which was extremely eye-opening to me. And in fact, a lot of the information I learned there, I used in the video that I made about the pseudoscience of the purification rundown. And that was really illuminating to me, because I knew the Purif was a bunch of crap, but I didn't know the science of it. And that briefing really helped me with that, and helped get me to understand you know, just how deep the pseudoscience can go, and how Hubbard uses the language and tweaks it to give you the impression that you're reading or learning about something that is very science-based, when in fact it has nothing to do with real science. So that itself was extremely eye-opening to me. There were also presentations done by people who came over from Russia, France, and Australia that talked about the history of Scientology over there, and the fair gaming and the actions that are going on over in those countries, which gave me, you know, some international news that I didn't have before and had never seen really much of on the internet, that again sort of give you the wow, it's not just here, it's also over there, and how, you know, the Scientology brand is one of just, it's just a pure ripoff, you know, and like everywhere you go. You know, you go to McDonald's around the world, you get a Big Mac. You go to the Church of Scientology around the world, you get ripped off, period. You know, and then you get stalked and harassed if you speak out against it. So, and that sort of thing, right? Because there were people who spoke who had some really, you know, some really bad things happen to them. And I've been very lucky or fortunate or whatever word you want to use that the church hasn't particularly directly come after me. And I'm more than happy that that's the case. But I've, you know, there are others who that have not been so fortunate. So I learned about that. And I think some of the briefings and lectures from John Atack, specifically, who was one of the conference organizers, were just very illuminating on some of the history of Scientology and the facts of Scientology and Hubbard and some of the things that he'd been up to and involved in. You know, all of these things, everybody at the conference contributed some part of the overall experience. There weren't really any parts that I thought were boring or lame or, you know, I didn't learn something. So the whole experience was really quite something. And when it does come up on Vimeo, I'll definitely post links to it on this channel and let you guys know that it's out, but it is coming soon. So watch for it. Tro125. Chris, what is your educational background? You're so good at explaining concepts. Have you ever thought about becoming an educator? I actually get asked this question quite a bit, which is why I put it up here. I'm not trying to, you know, have a big head or something. I have a high school level education, and I went to college for about 3 weeks before I got recruited to join staff at the Church of Scientology in Santa Barbara. And that's the extent of my formal education. I have spent a lot of time educating myself outside of school, and I've always loved reading and learning and things like that. And as far as being an educator goes, I think I'm an educator right now. And I don't say that to be smarmy or be a smartass. This is the best way I know how to be an educator, is to get myself out there and do this kind of work on YouTube and with my podcast and whatnot. Because I don't have the time, money, or inclination to go back to college for 4 years to get a degree. I it's just not something that I see myself doing. So instead, I'm doing this. And I hope that I can expand the subject matter of what I'm talking about here beyond Scientology, you know, moving into other destructive cults, and I hope to move on to other subjects. You know, I do little forays here and there, and some people want to see it, and some, you know, a lot of people don't. So I kind of stick with this subject matter. But I do hope to, you know, be able to eventually move on to lots of other subjects and things that I'd like to talk about. And that's kind of how I fulfill my educator role and purpose. Okay, and we're out of time again for this week's episode. I hope that these answers were helpful and interesting to you. And, you know, I actually had some other questions I wanted to get to, and I just ran out of time is all that happens. So I will pick that up again next week. And I hope you guys are looking forward to the interview that's coming out this week with the ex-Scientologist that I did. And that'll be coming out in parts and pieces, by the way. I'm not going to post the entire thing because she and I were talking for quite some time. But I think you'll find it interesting, and of course I've got a lot of other really interesting stuff in the works, including that long thing that I'm putting together about the E-meter. I know I've been teasing about that and hinting at it, but it's because it's going to be a very big video and very complete. And I don't want to shortchange that subject. I want to definitively say what everything there is to say about it and get it out of the way, so that when people watch that, they will have all of their questions answered about the electropsychometer and what it's all about. So that's coming in the future. So in the meantime, keep your questions and comments coming at me. I love them and I want more of them. And give me your feedback and let's keep going. I'll see you again in a week. Thanks for watching.